This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Side Hustle Podcast. We have a special guest in the building today, Laura Conti. How you doing?
I'm good, and you?
Good, thank you. Good, we've also got Luke here, my co-host. How's it going, Luke?
Good. Right? Yeah, been good. It's a nice. cold afternoon, but it's
a very cold evening. Well, actually.
Starting winter.
It is. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura. We understand it's a cold night, but we're happy to have you here. Spend it with us a little bit, and so we can ask you some questions and get into this. Just to start off with, just introduce yourself. Tell us what you're up to at the moment. What you're doing as your 9 to 5 as well, and we'll get into it from there.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, Laura Conti. I worked in finance for 17 odd years. The last sort of 10 of that, I was a finance leader. And now I run a social enterprise called Go Kindly.
Mm-hmm.
So, big change in my life. I should also acknowledge that we're on the country of the Wurrung tonight here in Melbourne, and acknowledge that. We acknowledge their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that it's never been ceded. And that, I always encourage people to learn what land they're on,
because
I think
for
we
sure.
don't pay enough attention to that.
No, that's I totally respect it. Actually, we should start introducing that as part of our intros.
Yeah.
That's a really good way of introducing it.
To like go and have a look around about where you are as well, and be a bit more like mindful about where you're from.
Absolutely, I think for me personally, that's kind of a thing by default, because I grew up in New Zealand, so Māori people and their culture and the way we use their words are kind of just, it's part of your DNA, it's part of your language, it's taught in schools. So when I see someone else mentioning that here in regards to, you know, Australian Indigenous people, it always catches me off guard, because I'm like, whoa, okay, this is still foreign and it shouldn't be.
No, it's quite uncomfortable for Australians. We're getting better, especially even Australians, but yeah, we're not nearly as far advanced as we should be.
Kudos to you. Thanks so much for putting that and saying it. Take us through your journey so far. So you started off being in a kind of corporate environment, landscape, where it's just very black and white. I'm assuming it's cutthroat, and you've just gone, I want to focus on a social enterprise. So kind of take us through that journey a little bit.
Yeah, well, it didn't quite happen like I woke up one day and decided I wanted to do social enterprise. It happened very gradually. I used myself and my co-founder, who is also coincidentally my husband, or maybe not coincidentally. I mean, if you know somebody, they're easy to work with. We both had backgrounds in corporate finance. We started out in kind of the consulting kind of corporate world in the likes of KPMG, PwC, Deloitte sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
We worked there for a number of years and got our professional qualifications and came into contact with lots of really interesting businesses in the process. Both of us came from an entrepreneurial background, to be fair. My husband's family are Italian immigrants, and, you know, always had to hustle pretty hard to work in sort of crappy manufacturing jobs and then do things on the side to earn money. And so he grew up watching that. And I grew up in a farming family. So, you know, I was sort of used to the ups and downs of sometimes having money and sometimes not having money, and good years and bad years and all the rest of it. So we came from that background already and sort of already had that mindset. But then, coming through finance, I suppose the first 10 years of our career were difficult in a learning sense, but also challenging in that we got to see lots of interesting companies from the inside, you know, how money got made and where profits went and, you know, how to mentor people and how profits got built. And then the 10-ish years after that, both of us sort of worked our way up into more senior positions, where I suppose we started to get a little bit jaded by you really understanding what people use their money for.
And this after a decade of being in the industry.
And also sort of thinking, how many more cars do you need? How many, you know, like how many more holiday houses can you get? Like how many more times a year can you go to Tuscany? Like there's this sort of, I guess we got a little jaded towards the end, and more than a little, we got very jaded towards the end of just thinking, I don't know that we want another decade and another 2 decades of our career in this kind of environment where we're just seeing other people sucking money out of the world and not actually giving back. Yeah.
So were you guys working in the same company at the time?
No, we've only ever worked together for a very brief period of time, very early in our careers. And we've got very different strengths as well, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But my husband is a very analytical thinker, very traditional kind of finance mindset. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, very ABC kind of things line up and add up very easily for him. Whereas I've always been a little bit more creative in the way I've approached things. And I really only fell into finance because a bit like now where getting into tech is kind of cool and you get encouraged into it. Mm-hmm. When I came out of university, it was all about commerce, right? Mm-hmm. You get into commerce, there's lots of jobs in the consulting. I was never really a natural fit for it, I don't think. I just needed a job at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so I was, we've got a very different kind of skill set and we have different experiences as a result of that skill set, despite the fact that we have the same background.
Well, in terms of the actual sector of finance, were you, I mean, I don't know, giving out loans? I mean, which department were you in? Because neither Luke and I are in that industry, so we don't understand.
I was more on the commercial side, so I was more the wheeling and dealing of making sure that we had enough money in the bank. So on the business side, rather than in the banking side. Gotcha. So I was, you know, negotiating returns, making sure that there was enough cash in the bank to pay the bills, working with CEOs and marketers and operations people to make sure that the product made a profit, you know, everything from insurance right through to paying people, everything on the commercial side of things.
Gotcha.
And I worked with lots of different styles of companies. So I worked in everything from manufacturing right through to digital and technology businesses. The final one I worked in was a startup, which was, you know, heading much more out of the startup phase and very much into established business phase. Whereas my husband worked at Goldman Sachs and more on the banking side, so he did much more of the finance and much more of the structured kind of traditional finance roles, where I worked more inside businesses, helping them make a profit and make sure that they could make their returns.
Yeah.
So when you think, so you talked about, I guess, like companies splurging money and sort of just frivolously just spending money on stuff. When you talk about making sure they had enough money in the bank to pay bills and that sort of thing, were there ever any moments where there wasn't enough money and like you had to like weave your magic, I guess, to...
Many, many times. Yeah, I mean, I think the irony of business is that people go through really good times and they go through really lean times. And I think, you know, that's obviously a bit of a cycle that we're seeing right now with COVID. And there is often very lean times. And one thing that jumps to mind for me is I worked in the UK for a number of years with a company which is very well known in the UK now, and the person who was behind it was the mother-in-law of their previous prime minister. It was a company that had eventually a lot of kudos and did very well. But at the time I was working for them, you know, they were bootstrapped as hell and she was scrounging around to pay people to design her website.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I remember having to call people and say, like, you won't be getting paid this week.
That's crazy.
Maybe in a month's time. So, you know, but now she's got a successful business that's been invested in by the people who own Aston Martin and she's done very well out of it. Yep. So, you know, there are cycles.
Okay, so you've taken us through that kind of financial corporate background. Talk us through the social enterprise a little bit.
Yeah, so essentially we started GoKindly with a very broad vision and a very broad view that business and brands just had to be a way to build one that gave back to the world and made the world better. Mm-hmm. And we're inspired a little by the likes of Patagonia and really who gives a crap and thank you, basically that model where we were like, there is a growing consumer and we were just seeing the younger people around us. I mean, but my husband and I are both 40 now and we still think we're young, but we're clearly not. But, you know, people sort of around the 30s that had disposable income who were buying things and wanted those goods to make the world better.
Absolutely.
And we just sort of looked around and went, this is a model that we can believe in and this is a model that we can see can work with how we know how to make a profit. So we know that business is there to generate money. Well, then let's use that money to make the world better. So we started with this very broad idea that there was a model and there was a consumer base. We just had no idea what that product might be.
Sure. Okay.
And so we basically looked around our house for a couple of months and just everything we touched, we went, could we do that? Could we do that? Could we do that? Could we do that? You know, and it was things like socks and tea towels. And
so that was a research phase, just searching around the house.
And I just sort of had this idea that you know, we're accountants, you know, at our core. And we're not boring people necessarily. There's this idea that we're boring people. So let's just embrace that and let's just find the most boring products we can and do something interesting with it.
Okay.
So it was literally walking around the house going, tea towels, toilet paper, done. Until we came up with bedroom pillows.
I spy with my little
eyes. Basically it was, yeah. Wow. And, you know, we knew it had to be light and we knew it had to be easily shipped, wouldn't break.
You know,
there was a few things, sort of we had a checklist and
so when you,
we landed on pillows.
When you landed on pillows, like how did that sort of come to be? Like what made you know when you landed on pillows that that was the one?
It's interesting. I don't know that I still have, to be honest, because I'm more attached to our brand being something that is kind and something that gives back. You know, our pillows, our signature pillow sells ridiculously well. Our pregnancy pillow sells very well. Increasingly, our low profile sells well. But I still, you know, as much as we define ourselves by those pillows, I'm not overly attached to it either.
Sure.
So if I was to walk into my house next week and see something and think, oh, I should do that.
We should add that to the portfolio.
For me, it's more about building everyday items, things that you're always going to have in your house that you're going to keep coming back to and being that brand in people's lives that you go, oh, yeah, that's where I buy that.
Yeah.
And I know what they do with the proceeds.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So you landed on pillows. What was that process like with your husband? Was it a bit of a debate? Was it kind of back and forth? How did you kind of define that as an item for a social enterprise movement?
I'm looking at you really blankly right now because I'm like, that's a really hard question. I don't know if I remember. I don't know if I actually remember. I remember coming up with the pillow.
Was it like paper, scissors, rock?
No, well, I remember riding home down the freeway from work one day and I was on my motorbike and it just came to me. I was like,
pillows.
I think I was thinking I need to replace my pillows from memory. I was like, oh, they're
a bit sweaty. Sound like my wife.
And I was like, hang on. I've got it. And that's really the only moment that I remember. And then we had a newborn baby, just to throw something else into the mix.
Of course, when it rains, it pours.
As if enough wasn't going on. We had a newborn baby and I started researching, well, where do you get pillows? Where do they come from? I don't know anything about where pillows come from.
Mm.
So I started trying to find a manufacturer.
Okay.
And I don't know, I just presumed like everybody, you go to China or you go to India to get a manufacturer. So I started looking there, but that became very obvious very quickly that, and I had an idea early on that it would be a bespoke pillow using the components of others that I liked. And so I started, you know, deconstructing pillows and putting them back together again. And I had an idea in my head what I wanted, but conveying that, A, into another language two, into another country where I couldn't get there to see it. And also because we're quite passionate about fair wages and not using plastic and a whole lot of other things, it just became too hard to do it in India and China with a baby. I think at that point it all got fairly hard and I thought, oh, do you know what? I don't know that I can do this. I need to find a product that's made here in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started asking around for Australian manufacturers, actually not thinking I would get any. But there's actually a handful of really high quality manufacturers here in Australia.
Wow.
So we ended up finding an amazing manufacturer here in Melbourne who we work with for some of our
explicitly
products.
For pillows?
Yeah.
Or do they make duvets? They do
other bedding
and
as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but their biggest, I believe their biggest seller is pillows.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
That's
okay.
Awesome for Go Kindly.
I know,
guess.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And they're good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're not the only one. There's a couple of others here in Australia as well, which you just wouldn't think that they're a product that's made here in Australia.
Absolutely wouldn't. So talk us through the social enterprise part of Go Kindly. Now that you've got the pillows and they're selling really well, how does that merge into the actual business?
Well, really, the idea that we would give back was always there from the start.
Sure.
For us, it was whatever we do, there is going to be, it's going to be built on the values and the premise. In fact, we had a little value sheet that we still have. I should have bought one for you. That's got like a kindness circle on it. And it's like whatever, and at this stage we didn't even have a product, we just knew that whatever it was we were going to, it was going to be part of this kindness circle, and it was going to be about hiring people who had a background that was, you know, that meant they might find it hard to find mainstream employment. We wanted deliberately to work especially with women who might find it hard to get mainstream employment. That we would use the proceeds and give it back to charities that focused on women. And that we would pay ourselves, but it would always be modest, and that we weren't setting out to become some kind of, you know, Atlassian style multimillionaires in the first 10 years.
Yep.
It was about paying ourselves modestly and giving back to the community around us. So it was always about this circle of kindness.
Sure.
And then we did some research into the different charities, and it struck me fairly quickly that I wanted to support charities with our proceeds that support women experiencing homelessness or in housing stress because I could just see this really big, you know, and this was sort of 3 years ago, 2.5-ish, 3 years ago before COVID hit. But there was this really, especially where we are in the inner north, rising kind of number of women sleeping rough. And I just knew from my own experiences that if you're sleeping rough, that's the tip of the iceberg of housing stress and homelessness. That underneath that is just people in cars and people in caravans and people couch surfing. And and because of some work I've done with charities, I knew that also most of those women have got children. And so it just made sense to me that we would work with a charity that supported women in those situations.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we work with two charities, but one of our, the main one that we work with predominantly is a charity called Juno, who used to be called Wishin, and they're near us in Glenroy. And, that's exactly what they do. They work with women who walk in and say, you know, I'm in a violent relationship and, I'm thinking of leaving, but I've got nowhere to go. Sure. And I've got children. And, and it's very... It's confronting, but it's also very rewarding to know that you're making a direct difference.
Absolutely. So my personal experience, I've had experiences where I've known women that are close to me who have gone through a lot of trauma in their life. So I definitely support what you're doing, but I'm also curious as to why you've just chosen women and not humanity in general and kind of include men into that equation.
Yeah, I think because it's me, because of my personal experiences in life. And I think that, There's just not enough funding that goes into the charities that I have worked with myself. And I get really frustrated at how much that then flows onto children as well. For me, it's not actually just simply about women. It's about their children and about the
intergenerational. Their responsibility, everything that comes.
Correct. Yep. Intergenerational nature of that. Yep. And the impact that leaves on children's lives. And I mean, simplistically, it's about women, but it's also about the bigger, you know, and women are less likely to be able to get employment, to be able to get high levels of pay in their employment. So it just sort of flows through in the work that I do with charities. And I just think it's important to the intergenerational nature of it's really important to me.
Have you always focused on giving back to charities or contributing even back in your kind of corporate days as well?
That's a really good point actually, in that actually the idea that we would donate was kind of a no-brainer because we were donating anyway. And it felt icky for a number of years to say to people, we're running this social enterprise and we give back, because actually that was what we were already doing. It just wasn't a formal structure. We had already worked closely with some charities and, I'm on the board of a charity of an organization. So, it was quite a natural progression.
Can we take that back a little bit further to see how maybe your upbringing or your husband's upbringing contributed to that empathy? Or just the way you look at the world in terms of, okay, I've got a purpose, I need to give back. Have you experienced anything? Have your parents kind of raised you in a way, or have you seen them as an example to go, wow, shit, okay, they're doing a lot for XYZ? Is there any examples that you can speak to?
Look, I come from an unusual background, which I'll touch on in a moment, but I think obviously that influences you a lot, but also I think where you live influences you as well. So I live in the inner north. I'm surrounded by refugee families. I'm surrounded by, a lot of conversations about people in Manus and Nauru and Christmas Island and the like. So, I'm a fairly politically minded person. I enjoy public affairs from like a dialogue conversation. Yep. So I think from that angle, I've always had those conversations about, you know, people who might be doing not quite as well as others. And I've always been an advocate for people like that. But, I think stepping back from that, I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian community in far western New South Wales, and they're not giving people necessarily. Sure. They're quite reclusive. They're quite, I would say, they don't really engage with the idea of charity. They don't really engage with the idea of donations, or in fact, they don't really engage with the world really much outside themselves anyway. But it did raise me to be kind and to be generous. And my family were always generous and always kind. You know, my family would never have driven past a hitchhiker on the road without stopping to pick them up. No matter who they were or smelly they were or how, you know, like that's just not the kind of family.
No judgment, just someone needs help. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah. You know, and despite the fact that they came from this quite secretive, quite reclusive community, we're generous people, you know, humble people, not the kind of people that looked down on somebody who had less than them. But it always kept themselves quite separate, you know, would never discuss who we were or where we came from or what our beliefs were, but we're always outwardly generous people. Also very hardworking people, you know, always believed that what they had should be shared with others. And, yeah, so I think those things have rubbed off on me, this idea that, you know, what you've got is a blessing and you're very lucky to have what you have. And I think also coming from a farming community helps as well. You have those big highs and lows of good years and bad years and you help each other out. Yeah, but certainly it probably was very much part of my family upbringing that, you never passed by somebody who needed help.
Yeah, no, that's great. And what about your husband? Does he have, has he kind of just plugged into this to support your vision and he's kind of become, you know, part of it, or does he have his own experiences where he can kind of add a little bit more just from that kind of charity vision and philosophy?
Yeah, I think my husband in lots of ways is a very typical migrant kind of family. You know, they came to Australia with suitcases and not much else. Community was very important to those early years in Australia.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Australia now we call a multicultural society, but, you know, the Italians and the Greeks and the Yugoslavs landed in a country that was, I mean, it was whiter than baby powder. And, you know, the sense that you helped other people, especially, you know, people from your own country who may not have spoken English. And, you know, my husband's grandfather taught himself to read by reading the – sorry, taught himself to write using the Herald Sun. You know, like he didn't know English. And
So very humble beginnings.
Very humble. And didn't need or want for much either, you know. Like they're not ostentatious people. That everything you have is to be kind of shared. And, I think certainly he's not as passionate about some of the causes that I am. He's passionate about them through me. But he's, you know, again, work ethic, very strong work ethic, very strong community minded.
Because even when you're describing the diagram, the kind diagram and the brand behind it, I'm assuming you're the driver of that.
Well, that one's him actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay, that's him. Okay. Yeah. So we need to give him a bit more credit.
Yeah, look, you know, he's a very empathetic person. Like he's very, he's much more introverted than me.
Sure.
I'm the extrovert of the two of us, and I'm obviously the more creative person, but he's actually very empathetic. Not nearly the secret silent person you'd think you'd be.
So from that circle, how long did it take? So I'm assuming that circle came before Go Kindly, like before the pillow. How long did that take to go from the circle to, I guess, having like a prototype and sort of getting into it?
3 months, I think. Yeah, we came up with, we solidified things at the Christmas. So I think everything sort of got registered on the 28th of December from memory when we were on holidays. So we were on holidays and we were like, that's it. You know, something's got to change in our lives.
Was this 3 years ago?
It's two and a bit years ago.
Okay. Yeah,
Christmas 2018.
Yeah. Where were you holiday-wise?
Polo Bay.
Very nice. Okay, cool.
It's changing, but it's out of the way. I like it.
Yeah.
Understated. You don't need to be trendy to go there. In fact, if you're trendy, they're kind of like, what are you doing?
You get called out for it.
It's good.
Okay. So you were at this beautiful holiday and then that's when the vision kind of materialized a little bit more.
It was like there was this friction in our lives where we just weren't happy with the status quo and we're on holidays and we were just like, and we're thinking about the year ahead, you know, and I was like, we can't do this anymore. Like something's got to change. So the two of us just made the decision.
Yeah.
That's an amazing amount of time as well. Like for every guest we've had on the show and even ourselves, like, seems to be taking like years to like build up enough to be able to like leave on under fives or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, look, I say 3 months, but I mean there was 17 odd years of watching other people make mistakes and other people dabbling, we were in other people's businesses basically. And so it was like to make you feel better about it, 17 years in other people's mistakes.
Then
we refined it and then created
That's your toolbox from there. So, okay, before we get further into the product, I just want to go back a little bit. Talk us through that plunge moment that you kind of just crashed the surface with. You guys both had a steady 9 to 5, mm-hmm. earning quite a bit, working in finance and stuff yeah. like that. How did that conversation take place between you and your husband? By the way, what's your husband's name? Can we just start using his name?
He's pretend. He doesn't exist. His name is David.
Okay. How did you and David get together and go, okay, this is what needs to happen. This is the plan. And just talk us through kind of the process of yeah. how you guys both process the information, how you went about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sort of goes back. I think my son was born in the May. So it sort of goes back to the May-ish, June-ish of that year
mm-hmm.
where things just kind of didn't plan out the way we thought they were going to. And I think it sort of culminated around about, I think my husband was made redundant. I think it was in the November, just before Christmas. So what happened was my son was born in the May and I had started work at a new company and pretty much immediately found out I was pregnant. And as a result, had no maternity leave or leave benefits whatsoever.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I was pretty okay with it. Like I sort of was like, well, you know, it is what it is. My husband's been at the company he was at for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he's just going to have to take leave and look after him. Yep. Like practically that's just what's going to have to happen.
Yep.
So yeah, we sort of planned all this stuff out. My son came early, sort of threw everything into chaos because there's very certain times of the year when you work in finance where you need to be available, and June is one of those times my baby decided to arrive.
Wow.
So everything sort of got thrown into chaos. And as you'll sort of know, all of the performance review things happened then mm-hmm, and everything. Mm-hmm. So my husband went on paternity leave and I promptly went back to work, but because I missed a big piece of things that happened. And basically I really got pushed out of the company I was in because it just wasn't working because I'd missed a whole heap of important.
The traction is just not there anymore.
I think felt a bit put out that I'd pretty much gotten pregnant the minute I turned up in the door, even though it wasn't planned. And, it was a fairly nasty sort of situation, as you can imagine, because I was a senior leader and it wasn't good. And to have a newborn baby in the mix of that as well.
So how does that feel? Just to dig into that a little bit, like when you get back and you realize like you've missed a whole heap of stuff and it's
horrendous.
Like it's not going to work. Yeah, like I would imagine so, yeah.
Especially as a woman who knows they're pretty good at their job.
Mm.
Yeah.
And who has never had something like this happen before, who has sort of been told most of the way through her career she's pretty good at a job and she's got a good career and a good future ahead of her, who's never experienced feedback like that before.
Wow.
It's pretty confronting and pretty hard.
And did the feedback come from people that you had worked with or were they new to the role as well?
CEO basically.
Gotcha. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
And, my work was always very good. We just stopped working well together and the gel wasn't there and it wasn't going to work.
Mm.
We just lost trust in each other and lost the ability to work well together.
Yeah.
So, it was horrible and I wouldn't wish it on any other woman.
Mm.
No.
So you think that triggered the effort moment, I'm out, I need to
do something different. Okay. I was like, I can't. And because I was an older mother, so I was 38-ish, I think, I'd watched this happen to other women around me for the last sort of 15 years and thought, it's a bit weird.
Mm.
Like, why does this happen when they get pregnant? Why do they suddenly not stay here anymore?
Yeah.
And I just had this moment of like, this is why they don't stay there anymore.
Wow.
Because it's too hard. You know, it is like.
Is it though?
It's
can they still work?
Of course,
and perform the same way.
Of course, they can. But it's just the culture, right? The people and the cultures around them.
That's so.
Like
shitty.
I would have people, book meetings with me at 6 o'clock at night, and then cancel it 1 or 2 minutes before. And you're like, I've just paid for a babysitter. Like, this is not how this works.
Yes, no.
Or at 7 o'clock in the morning meetings. I'm like, how am I going to get in there for a 7 o'clock meeting?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So, I just had this sort of epiphany of like, this structure's not working anymore. Mm. This culture doesn't work for women. This is why we haven't got women up here with me. This is why I'm the only one here.
Yeah,
because I was the only one that didn't have a baby until I was almost 40.
Okay.
So, I had this really big inflection point of like, I didn't realize that this is what was happening to the women around me. Like, you hear it in words.
Yep.
But like, when it actually happens to you, it's a completely, I don't know whether maybe you tell yourself that, oh, maybe they just weren't good enough or they didn't have enough skills or they didn't have enough support or whatever. And then you're like, I did have enough support, did have enough skills. It just doesn't work. We're just not supporting women properly. Just not.
Yeah.
And then, my husband was made redundant a few months later. And I think we both just went,
stop this.
It's just not working.
Yeah.
Like, we can keep doing this and we can keep working in this structure.
So were you guys still talking about the kind of the Go Kindly vision whilst being in your 9-to-5? At which point did that kind of kick in? Or was it when you were both at home, you were, you know, you were out of a job, he was made redundant, did that?
No, I think I stayed there. I stayed working there for another, I'm going to say 6 months. Okay. So there was, I think I left in the June or something. So I think my son was about one. So yeah, I'm going to say another 6 months.
Sure.
We juggled the two of the things
and you
together.
Endured all I that endured BS it. That came with, oh, the, with the 6 months.
And I was really,
that's pretty
really
big of you.
Stubborn about it as
yeah,
well.
Okay.
And in hindsight,
okay.
I'm like, why did I do that? I was so unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really stubborn about it. I was like, no, I've got a right to be here. I know that, you know, I wasn't here for, you know, really big things.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, you might be pissed off that I've got a baby and that wasn't part of the plan, but like, let's just get over it.
Yep.
Like,
yep,
I pushed through for as long as I could,
tried
every conversation under the sun with them to try and sort it out, and it just didn't play out that way.
Okay.
That's
totally fine. So at which point did you and David sit down and just go, okay, enough is enough, we need to do something, we need to start planning?
Well, I guess where was Apollo Bay? Like, was Apollo Bay after
right
that?
In the middle.
Or, okay. Yeah.
Oh, so you guys took a holiday whilst you had time off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was right in the middle. He'd just been made redundant and I was still working in this company. It was, you know, this startup. It was really uncomfortable. But
yeah.
I was still there, but unhappy. And thought, you know, we've got to try.
So pretty much the universe has had to. Was harsh to you both to go, all right, you guys aren't made for this. You need to go ahead and do
something.
And it
made me really cranky for a while. But then my husband always says to me, like, sometimes you need things to be really difficult and you need to be really unhappy because otherwise you wouldn't change, right? And
absolutely.
Let's be honest, when you work in finance, you are well paid. You have a cushy life. I mean, the hours are brutal and the treatment is brutal.
Yep.
But you get paid well and you've got a career for life.
Yep.
So if those things hadn't happened, this would not have played out this way.
Yeah.
We would
still,
still
be
doing
in a
that
job,
job
and,
right?
Yeah, well,
yeah, totally. And
probably still complaining about they're spending their money on another Ferrari instead of actually going, let's spend the Ferrari money on actually making a difference.
Yeah, definitely. So does that – so now that you've kind of moved into your, like, your own thing, because of the long hours with the finance side, like, is it you, like, sort of built for that now? Like, is that just, like – like just like normal kind of thing, or?
You could put up with the long hours and
can I put up with long hours? I've never been a morning person. So I've always struggled to be the person that got there for the 7 o'clock morning, for the, even the 9 o'clock meetings, sometimes even the 10 o'clock meetings. So I am always someone who preferred to work from sort of 10 through till 6.
Yeah.
You know, and then do something in the evening.
Yeah.
Whereas my husband is the complete opposite. He would rather start at 7 o'clock in the morning and finish at 2. So actually what it gives us is the opportunity to not necessarily work less, but work more in tune with the way that we'd prefer to work.
Yeah, nice.
I know it sounds really simplistic. And, you know, since COVID actually, we've been coming home and having lunch together every day as
That's
well.
That's awesome.
So
yeah, cool.
It changes the way we do business, basically.
And run your family and see each other and change your lifestyle and everything.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, we don't see a lot of each other because we split our responsibilities so that people, we're not interacting with the same people all the time and confusing people because we've got such a different style. He has very specific responsibilities and I have another. And often he'll work at home when I'm in the studio. So we don't work together a lot. Lunch is sort of our ways come together. But it does mean that we can play to our strengths a bit.
Sure, sure. Talk me through that dynamic between you and David, because my wife and I work together as well. We run a side business, but I'm intrigued. Well, I mean, what does that balance look like, and how do you guys maintain the business life and then the personal life and then the life with your kid as well? How does that all work?
On any other week, I'd say it actually works really well, but we've had a really tough week. We've got some product QC issues this week and last week.
Yeah.
And
quality control QC.
Yeah, like just some product that's come in that's not up to scratch and we're just not happy with it. And so the roles and responsibilities is a bit unclear who's responsible for dealing with that issue.
Who messed up this damn order?
Well, it's a bit unclear who's
meant
to go and have the, you know, who's meant to sort this out.
Yeah.
So normally it works very well in that where we know each other's strengths and, you know, we've been together for God, I don't actually know how many years now. We've been married for about 7, so, and then there was at least 10. Oh, look, I'm going to say probably 17 years we've been together. Well, okay. So we knew, we know each other's strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
We play to each other's strengths and weaknesses. But obviously there are these sort of points where it is unclear, like the current production issues. And it's a bit like navigating a minefield because you know you've got to go home and still have a relationship with them after you've sort of navigated this. I would say the upside of it is that I know what he's best at and he knows what I'm best at, and we can have conversations around that.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is because till this day, we've been in business for coming up to 2 years, till this day, I can't seem to switch off when I need to, and neither can she. So we're just about to put our heads on the pillow, ready to call it a night, and then I'll remember something and then we'll set up talking about it for an hour and a half and just kind of going back and forth. Sometimes it's a productive session. So I was like, okay, let's get a note, a notepad and a pen and actually start, talking about this and putting some ideas down. And sometimes it's just a debate and it turns into a fight and it's just like, oh, and it messes up my entire sleep.
Wow.
So I'm just like, I'm curious to see how other couples do it.
Well, I think as you're saying that, I'm like, well, how do we navigate that? It's because he's the morning person and I'm the evening person.
Right.
And so he knows not to talk to me in the morning and I know not to talk to him.
Okay. So you've set some boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries are there. Okay. Not because we necessarily sat down and said this is what the boundaries need to be, but because we just know not to talk to him.
That's how we make it work.
Yeah. And lunch we do have together on the days when we're around. And that is productive because it's a start and a stop. Because, one shift, because we have a morning and an afternoon shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one person's usually finished the morning shift and they're on a timeline. And then the next person's starting the next shift. And so they're on a timeline. So it's contained, I suppose.
And is your son in care or childcare?
Yeah, I forgot about him. we put him under the stairs and occasionally we get him out. Yes, he goes to daycare.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So he's, and that also helps, to be honest, because, he's a toddler as well.
Absolutely.
And so they're just like wild animals and you can't, do anything else when they're around, They just, they're so all-consuming at his age that, you don't have time to do anything, let alone debate anything.
Cool. So you've covered the dynamic between you and your husband. You've given us a bit of a journey into way back. Where are you currently with Go Kindly and where are you looking to take it? Because you did mention that pillows isn't, you're not a pillow manufacturer. You're way beyond that. So what's coming up at the pipeline? What are you guys looking to do?
My vision is and has always been that I want to be able to be a sustainable source of funding for the charities we work with, and that means at least $100,000 of kind of donation each year to them, because I know that that's what, can provide sustainable change to that sector.
Is that the KPI? Charity. Is that the goal?
That's my five-year kind of, that's what I want to be doing. I'm not wedded to any particular products. I'm wedded to our model and I'm wedded to our customers and to our kind of delivery mechanism. And I like the idea of being a bed and bath brand. Mm. So being embedded into people's bedrooms and into people's bathrooms and into people's homes, whatever shape that takes. For me, I'm on sort of what I call my 10-year sort of journey, because I don't want to grow too fast. Because I want it to be enjoyable. And I know it's never going to be rainbows and unicorn farts, but I don't want it to grow so quickly that I don't take time to enjoy it.
Absolutely.
And that's in stark contrast to my husband, who would be $100 million turnover tomorrow if he could manage it, So we do have this tension between us, because he's very much, and that comes also in from his career, where big is better and faster and better. Whereas I've seen companies grow that fast, allow the one I was in last, and I can see the culture that breeds and I can see the cutthroat behavior that can breed, and I don't want that for us. I also want us to learn new skills and to enjoy it in a way that I can't see us doing if that growth happens really quickly. I mean, year on year, I'm embarrassed to tell you the year on year growth. It's so big. Mm. But, it's like 600%, that's big.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, so can we do that again next year?
Yeah,
that feels huge.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, what does that mean practically? How many more people would we need to hire? How many more hours would we need to work? And I like being connected to our customers as well. Like one of the things we do is write a note with every order. And I enjoy that. Mm. I enjoy being connected to the people who bought our product. I enjoy knowing their names. Mm. I enjoy reading their reviews. And as you get bigger, you get less and less kind of scope for that. And you need
The human touch disappears.
And so much of, and so much of our product to date has been built on feedback.
Mm.
So there's also a part of me that wants to remain close to that feedback. So I want to be able to grow in a way that gives me touch points back into that and means I hire the right people with the right kind of touch into that as well, because I think you can, in fact, I know you can hire because you need to hire rather than hiring because it's the right thing.
Because you need to grow and meet a particular dollar KPI.
So look, growth is important and it will always be a
bit of a push and pull.
A tension point with my husband because he wants it faster than me. And yeah, ideally, you know, once we sort of hit the heading towards 10-year mark, I would like to be looking at acquiring other kind of add-on things as well, because I think that's an opportunity to. I don't know. My husband likes little tech things, you know, like sleep tech and baby tech and stuff like that that you can bring into products like pillows and duvets and things like that. So, that's sort of where we're thinking at the moment.
That would be cool. Yeah, it's refreshing to hear that you don't have a rigid plan to grow anytime soon or a rigid plan to bring in any products. You're kind of just doing what you're doing. It seems to be working. I'm assuming the charities are thrilled with what you're doing at the moment and they're reciprocating to the efforts.
I mean, that's not to say we don't have plans. Like, you know, we very much have live product prototypes all the time.
Sure.
But we're not attached to them needing to be out in the next 3 months or, you know, a strict. Yeah.
It's because you're not a product development company. You're not a pillow company. That's not what I'm hearing. There's that the mission and the goal supersedes what the tangible that you're going to be selling. So it's awesome to hear that. So, and I think that's, in the end of the day, that's what sells really. People buy into it.
We have community. Mm-hmm. Like that matters to me as well, that I hear from my community who tell me, well, you know, I don't think I'm ready for my new pillow yet. And you know, and you tell me that it needs to be replaced every 12 months, but I don't think I need it yet.
Yeah.
So also we have community that will give us feedback and say, this is not what I need yet, or this is what I need. Do you know? Like, we have people asking, for instance, for towels. I'm like, oh, I don't know, they're not that sexy. And then I'm like, well, who said a pillow was sexy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of feedback you get. Okay, well, then maybe we should start thinking about X or Y as a result of your community feedback.
Yeah. I like how you talk about, like, enjoying, like, not wanting to grow too fast so you can enjoy it. Can we dig in a bit deeper about, like, what it is you enjoy about about the business? Like, you talked about the customers and getting the feedback and writing the notes and stuff like that, but digging in a bit deeper from there, like, what is on a day-to-day, like, what is the what are you, I guess, enjoying? And the reason I'm asking as well is because, like, we hope to be leaving our 9-to-5 soon doing something like this. I just want to, like, we're trying to enjoy the process as well. We do enjoy the process, we love it, but yeah, it's from your point of view, because no one's ever mentioned that they enjoy it, right?
I mean, they have, but no one has made a point that I don't want to grow too fast because I want to enjoy the process. You know, I think me speaking personally, I think it comes probably from your finance experience that it's just been a blur and you were just trying to pursue something that wasn't really you. And now you've got something that's going for you and enjoy it.
Creativity, right? Like, I've never had the opportunity to work creatively. I've always had to work within very rigid, you know, A plus B equals this plus that equals that, and there's been no scope for what color, what shape, what are the different options in this conversation, because when you work
fabrics, materials,
there's no options for that. And there's just such few options when you work in a very rigid kind of career. And I genuinely enjoy it. It doesn't paralyze me the way that I thought it would. I thought all those options would paralyze you and it would be difficult to make decisions. But it's really enjoyable to, like, sit on and, you know, and go, oh, there's four different ways this could be made and how could I do this? You know, it's actually a really creative kind of process building a brand. And that's not to say I'm necessarily good at it either. Like, sometimes I'm really shitty decisions and you've sort of got to go, well, that was a really bad decision. But again, growth and learning. And I think probably having spent as long as I did in that one sort of career, even though it was over many different types of businesses and many different types of problems, I just stopped learning. I stopped I stopped getting opportunities to challenge myself. And so, yeah, this is enjoyable to me because it plays naturally to my strengths, I think, mm-hmm. in that I am a little more of a creatively minded person. And it allows me to grow and to learn that I wasn't doing previously.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a way of growing under pressure, and then there's a way of growing like organically and naturally, and it feels more organic and more natural now and less pressured.
Well, think about that. Sorry to cut you off. Think about the challenge, like not growing through the 9 to 5 and then being growing now and feeling the challenge. Can we maybe go a little bit back to when you mentioned deconstructing the pillow? So
sure.
I guess what I'm wondering is, and how did you know how to make a pillow kind of thing? I'm keen to understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, no, we didn't. We literally went to like one of those Manchester outlet places and just bought one of everything. And I couldn't even tell you what pillows we used at home prior to getting into this process. Like, I just think it was something from like, and it was a decent quality one, but I don't think it was, you know, one of those amazing quality ones. I think it was just an ordinary pillow from Sheridan or something. So we just bought one of everything we could get our hands on, and we wrote how much it cost on it. We wrote where it was made. Mm-hmm. We wrote how much it weighed, and we just, like, methodically deconstructed what its contents were, how heavy it was, what it was made from, where it came from, what its measurements were, because, you know, believe it or not, some are longer than others, some are shorter than others. We got some really crappy ones given to us because we refused to buy them ourselves from Kmart, and just, you know, was like, where's the end of the market, where's the top of the market, worked out what's that in the middle. In fact, I think there was I'm a bit embarrassed to say this, there was an Excel spreadsheet involved. I came across it recently, you know, price points and also links to people's websites. I had notes next to it, like shitty website and, you know, made for old people, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cool.
So it was about filling, where it was made, how big it was, you know, was it, was it cotton casing, was it bamboo casing? Blah, 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 blah. We just broke it down until we got to A, the price point that we felt we could play in margin-wise, and B, like a comfort that we felt was mainstream. So we were really, really passionate about it being something that was good enough for everybody as an everyday product. You know, it wasn't necessarily like for somebody with a really bad back or at the Kmart level where it's cheap and nasty. It was like really straight down the middle. It's like
a multi-purpose
everyday product that kind of was flexible enough to go with most people. Mm-hmm. And it was in the price point between really expensive and Kmart cheap and nasty down the end.
So then from there, then what happens with the manufacturer? Like, do you take pieces of the pillows that you like, or like what's the...
we sent what we liked and went and said, can you make this? And they went, no, here's one we've already got. Will that do? And we were like, okay. So I think our first run was one of theirs off the shelf that they had made for somebody else. And then when we got up to the next kind of next level of scale, we were like, okay, we're big enough now. Can we change that one now to do X or Y for us? Okay. And they were like, okay, this once we'll do it. And we were like, so if we order 5,000 more, can you do X or Y? So, it was really quite incremental. It was, no, we can't do exactly what you want, but here's one that's pretty close that we do for somebody else, and we'll tailor it and put your label on it. And then once we'd gotten to, enough scale, the second order, they were like, all right, we can do a little bit more tailoring. And then the next, and now we've basically got our own product.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
What I wanted to understand a little bit is probably just to go a little bit back. At that point when you were on holiday, David was made redundant. You had just been pushed out of your job. You guys were talking about this initiative and what you're looking to do. At any point were any of you guys kind of reluctant to go, shit, we're running out of money, should one of us go back to work, or should we just pursue this 100%?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm going to be honest, both of us still work as consultants on the side as backup.
Yeah.
Because, it still worries us.
Yeah.
Even after 2.5 years of doing very well, we're still but to be fair, we both enjoy what we do. So we both, we both consult and work other little piecemeal jobs because we want to always know that our mortgage is paid.
Absolutely.
And honestly, if it was one co-founder, I feel like the business could easily sustain one person and pay one person very well.
Mm-hmm.
To get to scale where it pays two people reasonably well is like, it's a big stretch. Yep. And we could do it, but it feels like we would rather hire expertise mm-hmm. at this point mm-hmm. than pay both of us for a full-time salary.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
So, yeah, we have made a very conscious decision to mm-hmm. stay a little bit plugged in so that, one, we've got a bit of backup
yep.
if we need it, and two, that we can hire expertise mm-hmm. and help for things that, like operations, that we need a little bit more.
Sure, sure.
Kind of expertise.
You know? I love the fact that Go Kindly is spearheading your lifestyle, where you guys see yourselves going, but then you're kind of leaning back on your expertise to still supplement that yep. gap in cash and just income that's coming through. Yep. You've still got to put food on the table, pay your mortgage. You've got a young boy, so there's a bit of sensibility to this, which is yeah. awesome to hear.
It's also it sounds like the cop out kind of way to do it, but actually when you drill down into it, it's actually really hard to find mm-hmm. jobs where you can work like that.
Of course.
Like, we are very blessed, both of us, to work mm-hmm. with really good people mm-hmm. who have given us the flex and have mm-hmm. have worked with us to say, well, yeah, you know, you can do this many hours a week, and still have you know this small amount of hours and yep. still engage with us.
What's the balance at the minute between Go Kindly and your consultation kind of gigs on the side?
We both work ridiculous hours, so it's not a
it's not like
conversation,
a set.
But it sort of comes and goes. So I do payroll one fortnight and he does it on the off fortnight, so we have sure. different fortnights of pressure points yep. because yep.
So you work at the same place or
no, we okay. work at two different companies. Yeah, I work at Campy, who own this.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. So I think I do about 14 hours a week.
Okay.
And he probably does about 21, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do God knows how many at Go Kindly.
Yeah, I could imagine. Are they alternate? Do you work alternate days to someone's on Go Kindly sort of thing?
There's someone always on Go Kindly.
Yeah.
And then on the days where we're both available, one does the morning shift and one does the afternoon. Mm. So
it's still kind of cool because even though you guys are doing Go Kindly together, your consultation jobs are still somewhat the same, so you guys can still bounce off each other in terms of ideas and problem solving, and you know, so it's cool that you guys can have conversations about Go Kindly and
cool or really boring. Like sometimes I just think we must be the most boring people in the world.
No, absolutely not, because I think that's the perception that a lot of people have, is that people from corporate backgrounds are always going to be boring auditors, bankers and all that. But once you start talking to them, there is actually other layers to them. I've got a really good friend who's a chartered accountant and he's an auditor and he's very successful in New Zealand. But you talk to this guy and he loves his men's fashion, and I've always tried to push him towards that, you know? And I'm just like, you're awesome. Like you've got a skill. You've got to do something mm-hmm. on the side with that, whether you run a blog or, I don't know, just do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a vision and he understands it and mm-hmm. he loves it. But he's too caught up in his career progression.
Well, there's good money in it, right? Yeah, this is the dilemma.
Yeah.
You know? Unless there's a friction point, unless something goes wrong.
Yeah. Well, I'm going back to New Zealand, so I'll give him a friction point.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'm going back soon.
Please do.
Yeah. cool. We're starting to wrap up. I told you that we'll probably finish up very soon. It feels like we're almost about to start.
Totally. There's
millions of questions in my head, but we'll be here all night. And someone who's looking to start their own thing in the kind of social enterprise landscape, looking to work with a charity, anything in that kind of industry, do you have any advice for anyone who's wanting to kind of break out of their routine and do something to give back?
It's a really rewarding space. I had no idea that it was they just embrace anybody, you know, like I think back to my days working inside corporates and startups, and I think there's this very kind of traditional view of who they'll embrace. You know, you've got to look a certain way and you've got to have a certain background and a certain thing on your CV.
You've got to talk a certain way.
There's a way you need to be.
Yeah.
The social enterprise and the profit for purpose space is just truly so diverse and so willing to embrace anybody. It's beautiful.
Mm.
Like I truly cannot say enough how much it gives us more than we give anything. You know, just the people it brings us into contact with. You're people who you just know that the fact that they work in this space means that they give a shit and that,
yeah, totally.
that everyone's willing to help each other out in small ways, you know. Like, I've got space available. Do you want to use my space? I've got an event coming up. Can I use your product? Can it's just a really lovely, generous space to work in. And I have no idea of that. I think, and there's, you know, there's lots of kind of social enterprise bodies, there's B Corp kind of bodies, whatever, you know, they're great to tap into, but like truly starting one and getting involved in that community is very, very rewarding. And so if it's something that people want to do, like, I could just, you will get back much more than you ever give.
Yeah.
You
know? Wow.
I mean, down to like the studio that we rent, you know, is rented very cheap from somebody who would never have given it to us.
Awesome.
Except that that's who we, what we do and who we are. So, you know, just things like that. Just
the doors that opens up. It's actually you're surprised that you've had those doors open.
I cannot believe how generous people are, you know, and then, you know yourself that you give generously. You know, you just go, well, of course I will help you. Like, it's a generosity of spirit that isn't there in the normal kind of...
That's the bottom line. It seems like everyone is kind of working towards that single goal, irrespective of if you're out there, you know, collecting funds, running charity, selling a product to provide that that kind of give back process, or, you know, that vision. So it's awesome. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I want in.
Don't just say it's not hard work. You're like, oh, it must be.
No,
you know,
of course
it's hard work. You know, and of course this crappy. I mean, this has been a crappy week with a pillow that's terrible. But yeah, overall, you know, we get back so much more than we ever than we ever give.
Just another question: how are you raising your son with that lifestyle? Are you starting him at a young age, or is he just are you just wanting him to kind of observe? In terms of how his parents are kind of...
For me, it's very much about the people you're surrounded by.
Mm.
And that has, I suppose, comes from my own background of, you know, growing up around a very specific type of person. I'm just really keen for him to grow up around all kinds of interesting and diverse and clever people. Like, you know, no matter what they look like and what they sound like, and you know, none of that stuff matters. And so, he comes to work with us one day a week and drives everybody mental. But yeah, for me, it's about him being around those people, him being around people that work hard, who value him and adore him, but also don't let him destroy things. And having some basic kind of like...
Just surrounding him by your environment and your
values.
Atmosphere. And
and also not being obsessed with stuff, you know, this material stuff doesn't matter. Like, it's his birthday in a couple of weeks, and I've told everybody he's not to get presents because this will be the last year that I'll be able to say no presents before he realizes that, you know, birthdays come with presents, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I've said no presents because he doesn't know. Like, it's just being able to sort of, where you can, filter out some of the shit that comes into their lives.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a great idea because the amount of, like, junk you get, all the plastic you get.
It's not necessary. He doesn't need it. Yeah, and I mean, you've got to play with what you can control too, right? Like, by the time he turns 4 next year, I'm going to have no control over it. So I'll control it while I can and then let it go and then move on to the next problem.
Go Kindly, where can we find it? Where can we buy it? Where can we follow it? Plug in all your socials.
All social medias, even TikTok, believe it or not. I'm not good at it. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, all the rest of that. If you search hashtag Go Kindly, you will find us. Also our website, which is gokindly.com.au.
Awesome. Do you have any stockists or anything?
No, we don't.
Everything's online?
Everything is through our e-com store.
Yeah.
We were talking about Airbnbs and then COVID hit. So that's still in our plans. We think it would be great to be in some of the high-end Airbnbs, but COVID kind of scuttled that. But for the moment, we're all e-com.
Awesome. Hey, we can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. It's a cold, miserable night out there. We really appreciate your time. I've really enjoyed getting to know about you, David, and your son's name. I still don't.
Oh, Frankie.
Frankie. Awesome name. Awesome.
When we let him out from under the stairs.
No, you've been gracious with your time. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Lovely.
We'll be right back.